In the past, Congress has been able to use the Highway Trust Fund, which is now broke, by the way. There just is a very limited amount of money in that fund to fund six-year bills. When I was in Congress, I served on the Transportation Committee, and we passed 2 6-year bills during the time that I sat on the committee. And we did it in a way that was very bipartisan, and we took care of America's needs, and we continued to build roads. And over the last 50 years, America built the interstate system using the Highway Trust Fund, built lots of other infrastructure. And the crisis in America is the funding. How do we pay for it? And what I'm recommending and what I've been talking about is raising the gas tax, which is the money that goes into the Highway Trust Fund. And we need to probably raise it about 10 cents a gallon, index it, and then we'd have the resources to really begin to make progress in America. We're falling way, way behind.
And those who argue against raising the gas tax, not necessarily because they're anti-transportation, is because there's so much alternative transportation fuel uses out there that there's actually less gas being used. So is that really the best way to do that when you consider that particular scenario?
The big pot of money that built America, the big pot of money that built the interstate system, built the magnificent structures that are our bridges and other infrastructure, was the Highway Trust Fund. And that pot of money, that gas tax, has not been raised for 20 years. 1993 was the last time it was raised. Even during a very conservative administration of Ronald Reagan, they raised the gas tax. Even during the time of Republican George Herbert Walker Bush, they raised the gas tax. President Clinton persuaded Congress to raise the gas tax. So it seems as though every 10 to 20 years we raise the gas tax because it's depleted. That's what we need to do today. If we're going to get back to being number one, if we're going to get back to fixing all of these roads that are falling apart, we've had some very brutal winters all across America, and it's created an America that's one big pothole right now.
It sounds like what we have really is a deeper issue than just raising the gas tax. It's a Congress that doesn't want to raise any taxes at all, period. In fact, has trouble doing anything at all, period.
Yeah, Congress is stalemated right now. There's no question about it. Congress should be dealing with immigration reform, tax reform, transportation, infrastructure issues. They should be dealing with budget issues, which they're not, and all of these issues are being kicked down the road because Congress can't really get their act together.
And I want to pursue that a little bit with you in just a moment, but I'm going to get right back to the gas tax and funding transit for just a moment. There are some innovative approaches to funding transit. One of them deals with the GPS that would control the miles driven in a particular area. What do you think about that idea?
I think all of these issues should be on the table. I think tolling is a way to raise money. I think vehicle miles traveled is a way to raise money. You'd have to pass legislation to do it. Tolling is already being used by many states, including our own state of Illinois. I think public-private partnerships. Well, we were at the Department of Transportation. We funded a lot of public-private partnerships to fund big projects. But there simply is not enough money in any of those programs to make up for the big pot of money that we need right now in order to rebuild America.
You presided over the impeachment proceedings of President Clinton when you were in Congress back in the late 90s, and you were chosen for this duty because of your work with civility in Congress and trying to reach consensus among party lines. Now, think about that situation and what we have today. What are the differences and the similarities?
I think the differences today are that you have 40 to 50 members of the U.S. House and a handful in the Senate, maybe 5 or 6, who call themselves Tea Party members, were elected under the banner of Tea Party to come to Washington and vote no on everything. They don't believe in government, and they really don't believe in any kind of programs that would move the country forward. And so they're the group of people that shut down the government last year, that vote no on everything, that stand in the way of really making progress in the Congress.
They would argue, I guess, that they were elected by people in their district to do just that. The people knew who they were getting, what they were getting when they voted them in. So is this really a problem with Congress? Is this a matter of the entire population, the voting public of the United States?
Congress obviously has been around for 230-plus years. And during that time, Congress has solved big problems, big issues. I think of Senator Everett Dirksen, who came from an all-white community, Pekin, Illinois, rose to become Senate Minority Leader and worked with a Democratic president to pass civil rights legislation 50 years ago. And we've just celebrated that significant legislation that was passed 50 years ago. The idea that Congress can't solve big problems is more born out of this idea that there are enough people that can stop progress, and that's not what Congress is about. Congress is about solving problems. Congress is about moving America forward. Congress is about keeping up with the issues of the day that need to be really looked at, debated, and voted on.
Even though you served under a Democratic administration, you are a lifelong Republican. What do you think of people like Donald Trump who are on the scene today? Definitely not heading in the direction that we've discussed here.
Yeah. Well, look, Donald Trump is not going to be elected president. He just simply can't be because he's not going to be able to attract more than Republican votes. He certainly won't be able to attract Democrats, independents, and maybe some other voters because he's alienated many different groups in America. And in order to get elected president, you have to get more than just your own party's votes. The reason that Romney lost was because he was only able to get Republican voters to support him. Donald Trump will only be able to get a very, very small group of people in America to support him, which means he won't be elected president.
What is he doing, though, to the whole fabric of civility in this country?
Well, look, the statements that he's made have certainly been bigoted. They've been prejudice against certain groups. They've offended many different people in America, including women, including African Americans, including Hispanics. And the idea that he promotes that everybody's stupid in Washington, that nobody knows what they're doing in Washington, he's an outlier. It's simply not true. And in the end, the American people are not going to buy this. He's been able to get 25, 26, 27% of the people in polls to support him. But when it gets down to voting, I think the American people are pretty smart about these things. They want leaders who are going to solve problems. They want leaders who are going to move the country forward. They want leaders that will lead in the international community. I think Donald Trump lacks all of that ability.
So who is Ray LaHood supporting for president?
I like Jeb Bush. I think Governor Bush did a great job as governor in Florida. And I think he really represents the kind of leadership. He knows the job, having watched his father and his brother serve in that position. He knows the challenges. He's put out a lot of good issue papers in terms of solving problems. And I think he would be attractive to the American people.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kernan. We're visiting with Ray LaHood, President Barack Obama's first transportation secretary and longtime member of Congress from Peoria and Central Illinois. How has your relationship with Republican leaders in the United States changed because you served in an Obama Democratic administration?
You know, transportation, which I served as secretary of, has always been a bipartisan organization. Not much conflict, not much controversy. I've maintained a very good relationship with leadership, both on the Republican and Democratic side, with members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, with governors, both Republican and Democratic governors, with mayors who are Republican or Democratic. And so all across America, our reputation among elected officials of both parties has been very high.
What would you consider as your major accomplishment, both as a representative in Congress and as Transportation Secretary?
I think in Congress, what we did is set a very high bar for bipartisanship. I've just written a book, which will be out here in another month, and the title of it is Bipartisanship. And I think my ability to reach across the aisle to maintain the kind of relationships in both parties with representatives from both parties, I think, carried me pretty far into Congress. And then serving as Secretary of Transportation in President Obama's administration, I think our number one legacy will be safety. The thing that I say most often is that people get up every day in America. They get in a car, on a bus, on a train, on an airplane, and the thing they don't think about is safety. That's what we thought about for 4.5 years at the Department of Transportation, making transportation safe. The other thing that I think we'll be remembered for is our the issue of distracted driving. Before we came into the department, no one was talking about it. Only 18 states had passed laws, and now almost all 50 states have passed laws against distracted driving, using your cell phone while you're driving or texting and driving, and I think we've saved a lot of injury and a lot of lives focusing on safety.
Is there too much focus on accommodating single-occupancy vehicle travel these days? What, in conjunction with that, what do you think is the future of multimodal transportation?
We put a lot of emphasis on multimodal transportation. What people in the cities want, particularly the bigger cities, Chicago, L.A., Atlanta, Philly, Washington, D.C., they want many forms of transportation. People ordinarily that live in those cities, particularly younger people, are attracted there because they don't have to own a car, that they can be involved in a bike share program, there are opportunities for walking and biking. There are opportunities for mass transit, whether it be buses, trains, light rail. We put a lot of emphasis on that, and we did it because that's what the mayors wanted. They knew that in order to attract young, smart people to their communities, they had to offer the kind of transportation that would allow for these people, if they didn't want to own an automobile and pay the insurance and all of the headaches that go with it of driving around in congestion, that's what a lot of these communities in America are putting their emphasis on now.
Tell us about Aaron Schock. Were you surprised by the rise and the fall of this person who was your successor in Congress?
Well, look, I wasn't surprised about the rise. We've known for a long time, ever since Aaron got elected as a write-in to the Peoria School Board, which is a citywide election. And he was elected as a write-in after being kicked off the ballot by the school board. And he rose to the position of president of the school board. And then he won a Democratic seat in the Illinois House, a seat that was held by a woman for 3 terms. And he knocked on every door in that district and got elected and served with distinction in the Illinois House. And so when I announced my retirement, it was no surprise that Aaron wanted to move up to Congress. And he was one of the rising stars in the Republican Party, and one of the rising stars in the House of Representatives, got on the Ways and Means Committee, which some people think is the most powerful committee in the House. And unfortunately, circumstances have developed here that required him or his decision to leave the House and resign. And now he's trying to work his way through this this legal entanglement, and we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, it remains to be seen exactly what happens with the legal complications that he faces. But do you think he has a chance to reshape his image and rise back to power in some way, either through the media or through government?
A lot of it will depend on what happens with this grand jury investigation and the results of that. But there's no question Aaron Schock is a very talented, bright, hardworking individual, and if he can work his way through this these legal matters, I have no doubt he'll be doing something significant someday.
And tell us something that we don't know about Darren LaHood, who is the most recent member of Congress from your old district, Aaron Schock's old district, and your son, of course. Tell us something we don't know about Darren LaHood.
You know, Darren was a very good lawyer. I mean, I think most people see him as a hardworking, good family man, somebody who worked very hard to achieve success as now the newly elected representative from the 18th District. You know, I think most people that have been exposed to Darren recognize that he's a smart young man, but he also worked very, very hard. But he's also a very good father and a good husband, and I count him as one of my four favored children, and but I count all of my children as favored children, and I'm proud of Darren, but I'm proud of all of our kids. But I would say maybe the one thing that people don't realize is that that he was a very good lawyer and represented his clients very well.
And you've been out of the public eye now, not as transportation secretary for a little while, and before that, many years in Congress. How are you enjoying your added free time?
Well, as I just said earlier, I've written a book, which I wrote it with Frank Mackeman, the head of the Dirksen Congressional Center. He and I collaborated on, it's a 15-chapter book. It's about my time in Congress, about the work that I did on bipartisanship, that I co-chaired four bipartisan retreats, and then other seminal issues like impeachment, like Iraq, like 9/11. And then I talk about my time as a cabinet member and that experience. And the reason I wrote the book is because hopefully 25 or 30 years from now, when my grandchildren are thinking about politics or government, they can look back and look at some of the issues that we dealt with, and that, you know, maybe 50 years from now, somebody will want to know what happened during impeachment or what happened on 9/11, what was going on in Washington, D.C. And having a seat on the Intelligence Committee, as I did for 8 years, and during 9/11, I think I offer a unique perspective. And so the book is really written for the people of Central Illinois, but others, researchers and other scholars that may want to look back a few years from now on these seminal issues and look back on the whole issue of bipartisanship, why it did work and why it doesn't work today. And that's really what we talk about. So I've taken time to do that. I've taken a lot of time to go to soccer games and my children's my grandchildren's soccer games and basketball games. And I've been doing some public speaking and basically enjoying life.
Ray LaHood, we appreciate your time today. Ray LaHood was President Barack Obama's first transportation secretary and longtime representative in Congress serving Peoria in the 18th District. Again, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much.